right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, once again, we got to see the January 6th commission. And I said this at the end of the last one. I didn't know if I really wanted to see anymore because I've seen, you know, all of this information that has been forthcoming, not just with this one, but with the others. And you see that it's like Donald Trump is the Teflon man. And it's almost as if, okay, he did these things. We know he did these things. Did he break any laws? And if he did break any laws, are any of those laws subject to having him locked up? And that's where we are.
Well, locked up, or, you know, Liz Cheney is moving in the direction of passing the taking the legislative action that would bar him from seeking.
I want to see him locked
office.
Up.
Well,
okay,
but
that may not even happen.
Yeah,
Many other Americans want to see him locked up.
I guess I have three comments. One, I did watch it. Two, it is very high drama. And obviously significantly important from a historical standpoint. Three, it's exposing us to some greater detail, but it's greater detail about something that all of America watched on January 6th, 2021. So it's not really news to us. And the depressing aspect of it is that Donald Trump still wields a great deal of political influence in a country, and it's in a country which acted essentially as a jury on January 6, 2021, and watched all of this happen, knew pretty much fundamentally how much Donald Trump was involved with all of what went on, and watched his reaction to it. So none of this is really news to us. What's more news to us is seeing people like Pappinger and
his own people
who resigned that day, his own people who were telling him what he was doing that was wrong, and he went ahead and did it. I mean, some of that should increase the level of knowledge the American public has about just how culpable Donald Trump was in the terrible things that went on January 6th. So I do have hope that the details that are coming out that show all these people who were clearly loyal to Donald Trump, who saw him in a new and terrible light in the period around January 6th and took personal action because of how revolting they found it. So that could be helpful. But, you know, what's going to happen? Merrick Garland is going to be very careful about bringing a criminal action. One of the problems in a democracy is that to bring an action against a past president who got 75 million votes in the country, you'd have to. He feels, I'm sure, that he has to have a very airtight case, so that Donald Trump doesn't become a political martyr as the result of criminal action that would be brought against him. And so that's a tightrope that's hard to walk. I'm sure Merrick Garland's feeling that pressure. Watching it is very hard from the outside, because all of us know that in fact Donald Trump deserves to have an action brought against him. But, in autocratic countries, people who get unseated from power get criminal actions brought against them, and they go to jail or get put in exile. So to some extent, bringing a criminal action against an ex-president begins to smell and look like what happens in autocratic countries when people lose control. So that's what Merrick Garland's worried about. He wants to make sure that in a democracy, what happens next doesn't look or smell like a political action being brought against the past president. And what is Donald Trump going to say if an action is brought against him? Well, he's already saying it. It's a witch hunt. It's a political contest. He's already making the case for that very proposition.
But Sandy, if he would just go away, maybe people wouldn't. But he's still out front, and as you stated, there's still a possibility. He's the odds-on favorite even right now. to win the Republican nomination.
Well, you know, I was driving here today, I was thinking about what we'd talk about, and I think I've talked about this guy a couple of times on the radio, but I can't stop thinking about this guy that I sat next to on the airplane flying from Newark to Florida, and at the end of the conversation, he was a real upstanding character, and I said, well, what is it that you like so much about Donald Trump? And he looked at me and he said, Donald Trump loves America, and I love America, and I love Donald Trump. And, you know, I just read recently that there was some polls taken, and 40% of the people in one of the polls said that they preferred the notion of a strong leader to a democratic government. And that's the thread, that's the political thread that Donald Trump is playing. He's playing that string on the guitar. And he wants to be that autocratic leader. His ego, his malignant narcissism is so profound that that's who he wants to be. And that's what he demonstrated on January 6th, that he didn't care about the Constitution. He didn't care about the peaceful transfer of power in the United States. He wants to be the autocratic leader of the United States. And there are many people in America, apparently, who would prefer the notion of an autocratic leader whom they love, who they think, quote, loves America. And when someone says they love America, they're saying this person loves the America that I want to love. He loves the, what, white power structure in America? That could be it. You know, you don't know exactly which thread of American culture these people want to hang on to, but that's what autocratic leaders are all about, is hanging on to a particular cultural thread and not letting it run through the four-year cycle of politics.
So we had a guy call yesterday, and or it might have been the day before, who said, if Donald Trump did these things, then I won't support him. But we don't know for sure if he did them, and so I support him. Well, the guy called, and he tried to make the case of why he still thinks Donald Trump is a viable person.
Mm-hmm.
But Sandy, all the stuff you've seen and we know and what we witness, and I still think that based on what we saw with our naked eyes on January 6th was just like out of some kind of movie. And
of course, you realize that the people who really love Donald Trump, within days, were saying that crowd was really Antifa. You know, it wasn't really the Trump supporters. It was a nefarious conspiracy to make the Trump supporters appear to be a raucous and riotous.
Well, and you know, the other part of it too, Sandy, was the fact that people said, well, these were good people, right? And there were people, many of them doctors, business leaders, and
well, I think
from all over the spectrum.
Well, yesterday, the congressman from Illinois, Kinzinger, who's done such a, you know, he's really a stalwart. I mean,
yeah,
I have to say, regardless of the politics, between Liz Cheney and Kinzinger and Luria, those people are
stand-up people.
And Kinzinger was saying that one of the terrible things, I think it was him, maybe it was Luria, that was saying that one of the worst things that Trump has done is he's taken the patriotic spirit of people who love America, like this fellow I sat next to on the plane. He loves America, and he's converting that love of America into the conduct that was January 6th.
Right.
Those people were doing what they were doing because actually, they do feel like patriots, and they thought they were doing the patriotic thing because they were persuaded by Trump that there was a nefarious conspiracy going on to steal democracy from them in the form of this fraudulent electoral process, all of which was a complete fraud. I mean, all of the story of which was a complete fraud created by Donald Trump. But he knew that he had enough credibility with this audience that he could get them to believe whatever it is that he repeated often enough. And, you know, Bannon, in that video of him that was, I think, on October 21st before the election, sets out this very strategy. Basically, we tell the people this over and over again, and they'll believe it.
So when you see some of what I saw on on yesterday where they had guys in fatigues in military dress saying this is 105 of the military something. They had already plotted and planned all of this out. Anybody who says that this was not planned and you watch the video of it, as I saw on yesterday, where some guys who probably had some military background already, and they could transfer that to a broader group of people who didn't have any military background. They were using the military verbiage.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when they were there and when they were making the movements that they made, anybody who thought that it was not criminal, there are many people who have gone to jail and many more that are going to go to jail because whether they want to admit it or not, it was criminal.
Well,
right?
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that happens, maybe it's part of American culture. Have you ever done paintball? You've ever done a paintball thing?
No. With the paintball guns? No. Paintball.
Yeah. Well, as soon as you start doing it, you start reverting back to when you're age 11 and pretending you're in the army and you're sneaking around and you're shooting and you're doing all this stuff. There's a lot of adults in America who have this instinct alive and well in them and are, you know, and it's the militia, you know, it's the militia
right.
idea. And I think Americans have to be awake to the fact that there is a fairly big militia movement in America. There's a lot of adults who want nothing more than to put on camel dress
yeah.
and act out this process. And Donald Trump is helping them do it. He's helping them believe that they're going to do this for righteous things. And in fact, almost all the times that we have masses of people carrying guns and doing stuff, they're always doing it in the name of righteousness. It's just their version of righteousness, that's all. You know,
you, Sandy, you can go back to the 80s and the Posse Comitatus
right.
up north, and this stuff training still goes on.
Tigerton, Wisconsin.
Yeah, as we speak now,
yeah.
there are people who are training all across this nation to do just what took place.
Well, this guy on the plane sitting next to me told me that he carried a gun all the time because something terrible was going to happen in America, and he was going to be armed. That's what they're worried. They're all. It's this apocalyptic theory that something terrible is going to happen in America. And that something terrible, the more I realize, the more I think about it, is that there's going to be this uprising to essentially assert the people's power against what? The administrative state.
So we've got to go to a break. Phone lines open, 844-967-2789. Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, there's so many things to talk about. The Democrats and the elections that are coming up. You know, there are people who, if we were to believe everything that we're reading now, it's a foregone conclusion that Democrats are going to lose the House, may lose the Senate. And you continue to see inflation and still no official word about recession. As you stated over and over again, it's not a guarantee that there's going to be a recession, but there's a fear for many people that it's coming. And so you've got people who, because of the inflation and all those other things, are saying we're going with the Republicans. It's not even so much that they don't, that, you know, they're going with Republicans because Republicans are the best answer to all the things that are going on. They just, with all the different things that have happened while Joe Biden's been president. They're blaming him for all of those things. Whether it's his fault or not, the Democrats are in office. My fear is that the people are going to get what they're clamoring for, Republican control again. And Republicans haven't said they're going to do anything different, Sandy, to make things better in any way, shape, or form. Well, they're just saying we're not Democrats.
Yeah, the Republicans basically have come to be the party that promises to attack the Democrats and to make sure Democrats don't accomplish what they want. That you can't describe a program the Republicans are for because they don't really have a program other than tax reductions, which they've handled when they've been in office a couple of times now. And so, you know.
But that's working.
You know why it's working? This is another epiphany. It's almost moved me strongly into the progressive camp. I think one of the problems in America is that the American government is not delivering value to the people that they can tangibly recognize. It delivers regulation. It delivers a bunch of things, but it doesn't deliver health care in an effective way, so there's lots of people wanting for health care. It doesn't deliver child daycare. It doesn't deliver education up and down the board in a satisfactory
Republicans
way.
Aren't going to deliver that either.
No, they don't deliver it either, but I'm saying that they're in Europe, because of the values of the cultural values, they've adopted governments which, while their taxes are higher, they can see the benefits that the government is delivering to them. They are getting the value of, for instance, health care. They're getting the value of education all the way up through college. They're getting the value of child daycare. So they have value delivered to them. In the United States, we've basically backed off from that. We don't give health care. You know, so if you ask people what value, you know, if you're a working person who is not getting any sort of government aid for any problems you might have during your working life before you get Medicare, there's very few things the government delivers to you. There's mostly the main thing you do is you pay taxes. Now, school districts are something where there is value delivered, and people do realize the value of the school district when they live in an area that has a high-value school district. So if you live in a suburb like Whitefish Bay, your house sells at a profound premium because you live in this district that has a great value provided to you, which is great school. So that's a value delivered by government. And I think one of the problems in the United States is that we didn't have a government that reached out enough, that provides enough value to us. In Milwaukee County, we had the parks served up to us. We have values delivered to us. I just think that in the United States, when Reagan decided that he would make the government the problem, he had a relatively easy case to make because there weren't very many ways that people who were defending the government could describe the value it was providing to us, other than to certain people in need.
But Sandy, I understand that theory, but Republicans aren't going to do anything to change it.
I know, but I'm just saying that there isn't enough value being provided to have people defend it. So, you know, it makes it harder for the liberal case because
that's what they're supposed to be about, right?
Yeah, the value.
But they tried.
Yes, but in America, we've set up a government that's basically providing value and benefits to people who have need. Okay.
Right.
And so it's this concept. And instead of providing value across the board, like a school district does, everybody gets the value of the school district. In the United States, most of the value provided by the government is provided to those who have needs. So the middle class, the broad middle class, gets the benefit of our economy and of our socioeconomic system, but they don't really see a direct benefit from the government itself.
So Sandy, it just so happens, in Newsweek this morning, top Senate Republican proposes bill for Americans to get more money. Chuck Grassley is looking to ease the impact of inflation with a new bill that would provide or save additional money for American families and students under certain programs to help them keep up with rising costs. Here's a Republican, the Iowa Lawmakers Family and Community Inflation Relief Act, was first reported by Fox Business, which was able to obtain a copy of the proposal ahead of Grassley's plans to introduce it Thursday. He's saying that people in Iowa, just the people you're talking about, are struggling, they're suffering, and he wants to bring resources. This is a Republican.
Yeah.
He wants to bring resources. That's what Joe Biden and the Democrats were condemned for. And I know he's one guy standing alone, right? I mean, it's not like he's got a lot of people supporting him in that. But he's saying that those people in Iowa are struggling now and that the government needs to step forward and do exactly what it is you were talking about.
I'm interested whether it's actual credit, whether it's
tax credits.
Yeah, tax credits. It's a tax reduction bill.
Yeah, actually, it would index and adjust certain thresholds for several tax benefits and government assistance programs such as child tax credit to reflect increases in U.S. prices.
I would just point out that follows the exact formula I was talking about. That's a tax reduction, okay?
Right.
So that's a tax cut aimed at solving for inflation, and that is what the Republicans do,
that's no different than what they always do.
Yeah, that's a tax cut maybe aimed in a better direction.
Yeah.
But, it's a tax cut.
All right, got to go to break. We'll come to the phone lines after the break, 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams, it's Fridays. We'll be right back.
A huge part in it, and he would even admit it today, I believe. But safety. No one invaded other countries underneath. Your party, Earl, wants to make this 2022 election about Donald Trump. Well, people are feeling Democrat policies. We're living Democrat policies right now. Higher taxes, higher inflation, record setting. If you're trying to sell your home now, it's going to limit people who can afford to buy your home. It wasn't the case when Donald Trump, I don't care whether Donald Trump runs or not, but I sure hope his Republican policies live on because they were prosperous and it kept us safe. And that's the fact, Jack. But, Earl, thank you so much, you and Sandy, for taking my call all the time. I leave you upset, and I had to call you and thank you because you're one of the few hosts that still do take my calls. And I do appreciate you wanting to hear the other side, but I'm telling you, Republicans don't really care about 2024 right now. We care about 2022, and we're living Democrat failures day in and day out.
So hang on, CJ. Let's Sandy respond to you.
Well, no, I appreciate your thanks, CJ. I'm not confident that you're right about the Newt Gingrich contract. I'm not quite sure which of the elements of the contract that you think he signed on to were so fundamental to the Clinton prosperity. I've never heard that attribution made before. But, I think it's good to talk to people of all different viewpoints.
Yes, so do I.
Because America's filled with different viewpoints, and until we learn how to talk to one another about them and figure out what's right and what's wrong about our various thinking, we're not going to get from here to there.
And I agree. Sandy, I think you're right. Until we do start talking, and I think we all have to say the same thing. It's how we get there, I think, is different.
Hey, CJ,
and safe and prosperous.
Well, I do think this, CJ. I think your tone has changed some. I think what we have to do when we talk is try and talk to one another and not at one another. And I think the problem you and I have had in the past is that we tend to talk at one another not dialogue, but rather statements. And so I think the more we can get into asking someone else a question and listening to their answer, the closer we're going to get to that dialogue. But thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you very much for the call, CJ. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Tom again from L.A. Hey, Tom. Tom? All right. So, but anyway, okay, Tom?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
As far as what CJ was saying just right there, I really would love to know, because I think we could find some agreement with CJ, is that does he believe that money in politics is a big problem or not?
Well, he did agree with that. You know, I think several weeks ago when he called in, I think it was the day I had the show, but to myself, I think CJ agreed that money in politics was a big problem. I think you were on the line at the time. So I think we do have that level of agreement.
Okay, and I think that's one area where we can agree. Now, one thing that would really help CJ in his conversations with people is if he would actually say the word democratic. He, you know, seems to want to say Democrat all the time, which was a big McCarthy thing, you know, make sure you stress the word rat at the end of it. That's why they do that. And it actually makes them sound unintelligent when they don't say the proper word Democratic. But what I wanted to say was that if I was running government, let's just say as an example, the one thing I would do, and I don't understand why they haven't done it, is I would take every DMV, I would take every postal service, I would take everything that is closest to the people, and I would modernize those things that they are so modernized that, you know, that a private corporation cannot do what the public can do and what our tax dollars are going for. Instead, our tax dollars go to the military-industrial complex, and our tax dollars go to, you know, $50 billion towards a microchip. And the problem is that it's far away from we the people. Things have got to be from we the people. And I think that Democrats need to start running on exactly what the best Democratic person ever ran. And I'm sure CJ remembers this time because he's old enough, I'm guessing, in the 1930s. I'm just guessing CJ is an older fossil. 1930s with FDR, who won four elections and brought this country back from the Great Depression and ran on policies, a big shout-out to Eleanor for her and Francis Perkins. But they were the ones that actually made it where people loved government. Ronald Reagan came in and basically took government and threw it away and said it was the problem. And that's been their thing. And like I said, it's basically like saying we the people are the problem. Because we are the government. We are the ones that pay the taxes. We are the ones that do it. I would like to see on a receipt every day or every week when I get my paycheck, I would love to see an itemized receipt of where my tax dollars are going. And maybe that would make people wake up a little bit and say, you know what, yeah, it's going towards this military-industrial complex or Raytheon or any of these places, more so than it's going back to me and my local post office and my local DMV and whatever. Because when it's that close, we just need to modernize everything that is so close to us so it makes government work.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call again, as always. You know, Sandy, I wanted to move to the fact that there's conversations that the Fed created the oncoming recession. And again, you're still not one who says the recession is inevitable.
Well, I would say that it's damn near inevitable. I think the question is when and not whether. I think the perfect storm in the world is definitely brewing, and recession is coming into existence on other continents, and I think it'll definitely spread to the United States. And I'm just not sure exactly when.
So is it safe to say, and that's kind of what this goes to, Federal Reserve has created the recession, but they had no choice, right?
Well, I mean, first of all, we've had a very extended expansion.
Growth, right.
Right? So after a very long period of extension, there is going to be a recession under some circumstances. The question is whether the circumstances will come together sufficiently to cause it to happen. Have we had stressful circumstances come in? I mean, absolutely. We had the pandemic, a terribly stressful situation. We had the tariff war initiated by Trump, a very stressful situation. We have the Ukrainian war, a very stressful situation to the world economy. All of those things have been very, very stressful. You know, coming out of the recession of 2008, you know, we were on a relatively long growth flight path, and then the pandemic came. So we had 8 years of consecutive expansion policies by the government running into the period of the pandemic when we again needed to put the pedal to the metal in terms of government expansion policies. And did the Fed participate in those expansion policies? Absolutely. But, you know, we had an interest rate that was essentially zero. You know, there's news yesterday that the European Central Bank had finally increased interest rates on their federal loan rate to banks. You know what they increased it to? Zero. It was a negative 0.5% going into yesterday, and they increased it 0.5% to zero. So, you know, there have been a very low interest rates prevailing in the world for quite a long time, and so low that they were well below any historical norm. You know, our current interest rates are essentially at 50-year average rates right now, but we do have inflation at a very high rate.
You know, Sandy, when we come back, I was reading this article, and it talked about $6.5 trillion in 48 months. The fact that we put that printed dead money and put that in, and we created
quantitative easing.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's at the root of this. So we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's almost like you know this thing is coming. Can't stop it. It's probably going to hit here some where we really see it during the winter months. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's certainly coming. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. So, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You're here with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you know, this is an article from the director of the Center for Economic Development Research at Georgia Tech. And so every economist... it doesn't mean because you're an economist you always see eye to eye with other economists, right? I mean, it's not an exact science, but is it really the opinions of each economist based on what they know when we talk about these kinds of policies and things? Or
there's never unanimity amongst economists, first of all, ever almost. But second of all, something as complex as what is it that's causing the current inflation, there's a number of factors. Some of it is the result of...
You mean it's not Joe Biden?
Well, Joe Biden's only been in office for a year and a half. So the fact is inflation has set in during the year and a half. But that particular article is looking at policies over the past 4.5 years, which, of course, only three of those years are prior to Joe Biden. A year and a half includes Joe Biden. So that article wouldn't be able to point the finger at Joe Biden. But if you look at the, and what the policy they're talking about is the so-called quantitative easing policy that the Federal Reserve used, which was to essentially buy up debt, both federal debt as issued by the federal government as well as corporate debt, to buy up debt and hold it in the Treasury's hands, and then to essentially create money that way by buying debt with money that was created by the Federal Reserve, and then to ultimately at some point sell that debt, which would be to reverse the process.
So a dangerous practice?
Well, dangerous not. I mean, dangerous, no. Experimental, yes.
Right.
Quantitative easing had not been used in a substantial degree before the period of the Bush, the financial system collapse at the end of the Bush presidency, and then during the Obama period and during the Trump period, quantitative easing continued. It was handled by the Federal Reserve, which is supposedly something outside the domain of politics, and it was designed to create another funnel for adding money to the economy that was not fiscal fiscal revenue deficits run by the federal government. So you can fuel the economy a couple of ways. You can run a big deficit by the federal government where the federal government spends more than it takes in revenue. That's expansionary. And then quantitative easing was another way to add money into the economy. And it was done. It was done for a long period of time without really having much impact on interest rates, meaning that the government, the economy was not overfueled with money. Well, the prices were not getting bid up. We did not have inflation, we had essentially no inflation, and we had very low interest rates as a result of no inflation. Inflation is the measurement of the imbalance between money and goods. So what then happened recently that has created inflation was a shortage of goods. So we've had this amount of money fueling the economy, but there wasn't a shortage and things weren't being bid up in price. And then more recently, now they've been bid up in price, and the question is why? Well, I think the major triggering point has been shortage, okay? And shortage was created at the time through the tariffs, through the pandemic, and through the supply chain kinks that were created by both of those factors. And so now we have shortage, and we have shortage across the world, and the Ukrainian war then accelerated that and put it in a shortage in a very important sector of the world economy, which is energy.
So, Sandy, now we have all of those things. Recession is going to be forthcoming. With the supply chain.
Well, but incidentally, as we talked about off the air, we were going to have a recession sometime between 2008. We had a recession in 2008 as the result of the financial collapse. Since then, we've had essentially a constant period of expansion. We would have had some recession between then and now if we had not had these expansion policies to essentially support the economy in ways that would avoid recession.
So now that all of these factors are here, during the time of the recession, will the supply chain situation get better because of the recession?
Well, one of the solutions to shortage is recession, right? If you shave demand down, shortage becomes less pronounced. So it's sort of an ugly, painful solution to shortage, but recession will help to solve the shortage problem. And hopefully the supply chain problem, the kinks in the supply chain, which are frictional, meaning that it'll take some time to get the kinks out of the chain, but that friction in the supply chain is in the process of working its way out. The kinks are in the process of working themselves out. So unless there are dynamic changes in the world again to create new kinks, the supply chain should work itself out over time and smooth itself out so that it would be more responsive to world needs and less inclined to create shortages that would support the inflationary trend.
So let's kind of, you know, play this out, if you will. 2022, you know, the midterm elections. We are in recession. All of 2023. going to 2024 still
Let me just say that recession is a technical term that relates to GDP and the decline of GDP over
a period of time. But it also means people laid off.
But GDP can relate to GDP is the measurement, though.
Okay.
And so GDP can continue to rise as the result of price rises, which is inflation, right? So inflation can at least mask for a while a reduction in output. You can have reduced output and increased prices, and you still have an increasing GDP. At some point, the correlation between reduced output and GDP connects, and you now have a recession. But meanwhile, with the increase in prices, this inflation is causing pain to a variety of people, voters in particular.
Well, that's
So I think you'd be hard pressed to tell people that the economy was doing great as far as they were concerned when they're suffering prices at the grocery store, the gas pump, and all these places that remind them all the time that they're actually making less real dollars.
Well, and Sandy, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, because Democrats and Biden and the people are saying, well, the economy's doing great and all these things, and people are looking at, hey, the economy may be doing great, but I'm not.
Yeah, I mean,
and so I don't care about the economy doing great if I'm struggling in it. It doesn't benefit me, and so we know that that's going to have impact in the 2022 elections. It certainly looks for all the world, because it's global recession, that 2024 we may still be in recession, or just barely climbing out of it. Well, by then, Republicans could probably have taken over the Congress and other things. I mean, we're in an unstable period, right?
Interestingly, CJ wants to pat the Republicans on the back and say that it's Republicans that bring prosperity to America. But the fact is that the Donald Trump period, which was just a continuation of the growing prosperity that he inherited from Barack Obama, but if you look at the history of Democratic presidents and Republican presidents over the last 50 years, most of the prosperity in America has occurred during the period of Democratic presidencies. Okay? So Democratic presidencies have been a period of significant prosperity, and there's only been two periods apparently where that might not be the case: the Jimmy Carter period, and right now we do have prosperity in America, but we have inflation, which is causing Tom, Dick, and Mary to suffer at the grocery store.
So what would you attribute the fact that the Democrats over that 50-year period, what is it about their policies that would bring that?
It brings prosperity?
Yes.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the general financial community's view of the predictability of government, the solidity of the governmental arrangements. Republicans have just basically tried to fight for tax reductions, and that's what they've been all about, and it hasn't been terribly successful.
You know, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
For peace, the prayer your soul longs for you to release. Not just on those urban bloodstained streets, but in every war-torn country where hate, pain, and killing feast. Where is our peace prayer? Our desperately needed prayer for peace. Not a love song between you and I, but a song that will touch the universe to the heavens.